Welcome, everyone, and thanks for the full committee hearing. One quick note, the treats have been furnished to you by St. Michael Albertville, so we can thank them for that. That was very kind of them. So we do have a quorum present. And with that, we have two sets of minutes to review. So Representative Bennett, have you had a chance to review the March 26, 2026 minutes?
Mr. Chair, I have, and the minutes look wonderful, and I move to approve them.
Representative Bennett moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Minutes are approved. Representative Bennett, have you had a chance to look at the April 9th minutes?
Yes, I have, Mr. Chair, and those look great as well. I move those minutes.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Bennett moves the April 9th minutes for 2026. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Those minutes are adopted. Members, we have a very full schedule today and looking forward to some good discussion. It is my intention that at 1:45 we'll have concluded this bill and be voting on it, so we can get into the second bill and conclude that one at about 2:15 to get into presentations. I do apologize. There will be quick testimony, and I'll be limiting the testimony to about a minute or less. Many of the testifiers we've heard over the course of this bill in the last year, and so I would ask that you would hold to that, and I do have to be pretty firm on that today so I can get to some discussion. So, members, with that, we have Representative Lawrence at the testifier stand. The House File 3493, the Safe Schools Revenue Increase Bill, is in front of us. We'll start with this by Representative Lawrence. Representative Lawrence, would you like to move House File 3493 before the committee for re-referral to the Committee of Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Joachim, I would like to move House File 3493 before the committee.
Thank you. Representative Lawrence, you do have the DE amendment. Would you like to move the DE amendment to put the bill in the shape that you would like?
Mr. Chair and Co-Chair Joachim, yes, I'd like to move the DE1.
Thank you. Members, all those in favor of the DE amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The DE amendment is adopted. Members, we're sending this to Rules and Ways and Means, because the chief clerk has asked that we send it there. They may decide it goes differently, but I wanted to let you know that's why the motion is in front of you. Representative Lawrence, please present your bill.
Chair Kreischer, thank you very much. Chair Joachim, as well as fellow members, I'm honored to sit before you tonight and present House File 3493, and specifically the delete all amendment. This bill works to create a safe learning environment for all students, and I'm going to reemphasize that, all students in the state of Minnesota. A few of the key points that this proposal has is it provides options for protecting every student in every school, public, non-public, charter, tribal. All the schools are covered, every student is covered. It includes bipartisan and common sense solutions that are practical and realistic. Most of them, as the chair has referenced, have already been heard before this committee at least once, if not the policy committee as well. The options within this bill are multi-layered, flexible to meet our local school districts' needs. Some of the key provisions this bill includes: more school safety funding for our public, and I'm going to repeat, our public, our non-public, and our tribal charter, as well as tribal schools; more funding for student mental health in schools. It's been a huge topic we've discussed multiple times within our educational committees, more funding for student mental health; local options for anonymous threat reporting systems. We've heard a lot of discussion on that, on how kids as well as teachers need the ability to report anonymously threats they see happening in school. It also includes school safety plans. In addition, student discipline reform to protect teachers, staff, as well as students. House File 3493 is a bill that I believe, and I think you can agree, all of us can support to make schools safer for every student in the state of Minnesota. And that's the key for us today, is addressing the safety of all kids in our schools. With that, I have some testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lawrence. Please introduce your first two testifiers.
Okay.
And have them state their name for the record, and they can begin.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to refer to you. Who was first on the agenda? I didn't.
Yep. So I have Ms. Hilliard and Mr. Flansburgh.
Okay.
All right. Good afternoon. My name is Rachel Hillier. I'm the Director of Prevention, Safety, and Grants for ISD 728 Public Schools in Rogers, Zimmerman, Otsego, and Elk River area. And I'm here today to speak to you and just share in a minute my experience. We have anonymous reporting system through Say Something. from Sandy Hook Promise. And I can tell you in short that we have saved lives as a result of having that. We've had 173 tips since its inception, and most of those are related to either planned school attacks or suicide ideation. Just had one last night. So it's been an important feature for us. I come to you with almost 30 years in education. My first year of teaching was in Windsor, Colorado, 70 miles north of Columbine. I remember watching kids sitting in my classroom who had family members that were involved in that attack. So this is near and dear to my heart. My own children sit in the seats in our public school district. And so I would highly encourage you to increase Safe Schools funding. We do not have enough money to fund all of our services. School resource officers take up right now 70% of that budget. Not enough left for mental health. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Flansburg. If you'd state your name for the record.
Chairs and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Nathan Flansburg. I'm the superintendent at PAC Charter School, a K-12 system serving about 1,500 students. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak with all of you today. In 2026, the definition of a functioning school has changed, and it's no longer sufficient to focus solely on academics. Schools are now expected to provide layered systems of protection: physical security, mental health supports, and digital safeguards. These are not enhancements to the educational experience. They are now part of the baseline expectations families have when they send their children to us each and every day. The challenge is not whether these supports are necessary. I believe we all agree that they are. The challenge is how they're funded and whether that funding model treats all public school students fairly. Right now, it does not. Public charter schools are left out of the safety aid funding. This exclusion creates a very real operational strain. Every dollar we allocate towards safety infrastructure or support systems must come from existing resources, resources that are already committed to classroom teachers, paraprofessionals, and student programming. Unlike traditional districts, we do not have the option to go back to our community through a levy to fill those gaps. That constraint fundamentally changes the decisions we are forced to make. It is not about prioritizing safety. We will always prioritize safety. It is about what we must give up in order to provide it. It's not a position any public charter school should be in. This is about alignment. I believe there's broad agreement that school safety is essential, that funding structure should reflect the commitment consistently across all public schools, including public charter schools.
And Mr. Flanders, if you could wrap up.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I respectfully ask for your support for House File 3493.
Thank you, Mr. Flansburg. Thank you for that. Mr. Atkins and Ms. Webster, if you would come up next. And then after that, it'll be Ms. Sandsmark and Ms. Hoffer. Mr. Atkins, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Chair Kreisha, Chair Joachim, and members of the committee. My name is Jason Atkins, and I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. We're here today to support 3493 as one prong of a multi-layered series of solutions needed to protect all kids as a matter of public safety. A few weeks ago, this committee heard from leaders of the Violence Prevention Project Research Center at Hamline about the evidence related to school shootings. The key takeaway for me was that there are multiple elements needed to protect kids from mass shootings in schools, and working for one's preferred approach, whether it be gun prohibitions or building security or mental health, was insufficient on its own to meet the goal of stopping more of these tragedies. Our approach has been to promote sensible gun laws that evidence shows may have an impact on limiting casualties and injuries in mass shootings, such as the high-capacity magazine ban. We also seek to help parents foster constructive relationships with their kids about social media usage through our bipartisan Stop Harms of Addictive Social Media legislation. That bill is especially important after the folks from Hamline highlighted how school shooters are often formed online. School security is undoubtedly one of the pieces of this equation, as secure buildings disincentivize shooters, but the reason that we support this is because of its flexibility in doing things such as mental health, counseling, and staff training. We strongly urge your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Nice close. Ms. Webster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jess Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid, also representing the Minnesota Disability Law Center. We stand in strong opposition to the provisions in 3493 that repeal requirements for non-exclusionary discipline and restore suspensions for our youngest kiddos. This was some actually really fantastic and amazing work that Representative Richardson championed in 2023. As an attorney for our littlest learners, I sometimes feel like my role in this space is just to be a constant reminder of who we're talking about. And today we're talking about the best way to work with 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds. They still watch Sesame Street and Bluey. They like stickers on their papers. They love markers that smell like fruit. Mm-hmm. So if you've had a 5-year-old in your life, do you remember what it was like when the 5-year-old wanted the red cup, not the blue cup, and there was only blue cups left? Our kids are learning how to do school. They're learning that, how do you navigate frustration, boredom, anger? How do you communicate your unmet needs? How do you learn to navigate new adults? And how do you figure out which adults can be trusted? When you kick our youngest kids out of school as a disciplinary tool, they begin to internalize that school isn't meant for them and that adults can't deal with them. This is not the legislation we need, members. I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Sandsmark and Ms. Hoffer, I hope I got those right. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much. Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Erin Sandsmark. I'm the Executive Director of Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. I'm here to express my opinion on the DE amendment for House File 3493. This amendment would directly repeal Minnesota's efforts on non-exclusionary discipline. And we at SNS are not here for this bill. The current Minnesota law banning K-3 suspensions is a critical research-backed measure designed to maximize instructional time and prevent the disproportionate disciplining of young children. Moving us backwards will not help our children. I ask you, what is the actual educational benefit of a suspension? School pushout helps no one and harms children most of all. It puts teachers behind. It damages relationships with parents. There is a net negative with suspensions. Our collective goal must be to address underlying behavioral issues through positive and restorative practices, and not by removing our youngest learners from the classroom. Remember, like Ms. Webster said just before me, 5, 6, 7, and 8-year-olds. Thank you. That's my time. Vote no, please.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Hoffer.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Maren Christensen Hofer. I'm the Executive Director for the Multicultural Autism Action Network, and I'm also a parent of a child with a disability. I'm here to note some concerns on H53493, a DE amendment. First of all, we would ask that you consider including the language on school safety plans that specifically addresses the need for those plans to consider children with disabilities. The Senate has language in Senate File 3717, House File 3485 that was changed in an amendment on March 17th, I believe, and we would encourage you to include that language in the bill. We're also concerned about line 6-4, which eliminates the prohibition on suspensions. As my colleagues have spoken earlier, we feel that the overwhelming negative effects on suspensions really serve no clear purpose for children in grades K through 3. Further, we know that American Indian students are 10 times more likely to be suspended than their white peers. African American students are 8 times more likely to be suspended, and students of color are twice as likely, and that goes for children with disabilities as well. This is a discriminatory practice, and this bill does nothing to address these long-held problems. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. I apologize for getting your name incorrect, Ms. Hofer. Ms. Molas and Ms. Jean. Hello, and state your name for the record, and please begin your testimony. And then Ms. Jean, Laura Jean.
Ms. Jean.
Oh, I'm sorry. So no Molas at this point. Okay, Ms. Jean, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Laura Jean. I am a parent advocate and manager of parent training and advocacy and the public policy coordinator at Pacer Center. And I just want to address a couple of concerns around House File 3493. We appreciate the focus on school safety and evidence-based practices in this bill. As this bill is implemented, it is critical that all provisions align with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA. IDEA sets the baseline. Students are entitled to a free, appropriate public education, FAPE, in the least restrictive environment, LRE, and through the IEP process is designed to protect families' rights. As written, this bill gives public funds to private institutions that do not have to adhere to IDEA. Some key guardrails to maintain include that safety plans cannot override the IEP process. Placement and service decisions must remain individualized and team-based. Threat response systems must be carefully implemented to consider students with disabilities that may respond in unexpected ways. Coordination with law enforcement should not lead to disproportionate impacts on students with disabilities. Discipline provisions must remain IDEA compliant, especially for younger students and those receiving special education services. Evidence-based must include disability-informed practices, not just general safety outcomes, but the impact on students with disabilities. And I will note that none of the current language in this bill addresses how to meaningfully include students and staff with disabilities. We share the goal of safety and supportive schools, safe supportive schools, but it must align with IDEA protections and consider how to include individuals with disabilities. Getting this right ensures safety is for everyone and strengthens inclusion rather than unintentionally increasing exclusion. We oppose any changes to suspension and the ban. We don't want to repeal that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I have Corey McIntyre, Mr. McIntyre, and Ms. Schnabel. Mr. McIntyre, please state your name for the record. Begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Corey McIntyre, superintendent of Anoka-Hennepin School District, serving 37,000 students. I'm here to testify in support of House File 3493, Delete All Amendment, Section 3, that provides for a K-3 student dismissal up to 3 days for following a disciplinary incident with superintendent approval. This year through February 9th, our district has seen 142 K-3 classroom evacuations in Anoka-Hennepin for unsafe, dysregulated student behavior. While this is a small percentage of our classrooms in our district, any evacuation of a classroom results in lost instructional time and trauma to the student and other students and staff in the classroom. By February 9th, we had 157 staff injuries. 110 of those, or over 70%, are at the K-3 level. House File 3493 provides the needed educational benefit and purpose of giving the needed time for the school team to work in partnership with a student's parent or guardian to address the behavior and develop a plan for a successful return to school. Thank you for your consideration of this important language.
Thank you, Superintendent McIntyre. Ms. Schnabel.
My name is Denise Schnabel. I'm currently the principal of Ramsey Elementary School, and I bring 28 years of experience in education to this discussion. Currently, I'm responsible for the safety and academic growth for 960 students, and I'm here to speak in support of HF 3493 Delete All Amendment, specifically Section 3. While we prioritize restorative practices, strategic interventions, and multi-tiered systems of support, we're seeing a rise in high-intensity behavior incidents that exceed the capacity of a traditional tool. Even in elementary years, there is a misconception that elementary education only involves little people with little problems. However, in my past year, my staff has managed the community aftermath of arson by a first grader, a hold in place of an entire wing of my building for almost an hour due to significant physical threats and property destruction by a second grader, and staff absences due to injuries, including concussions, bites breaking the skin, and bone bruises. These are traumatic events witnessed by many that shatter the sense of safety and for our entire school community. To be clear, I do not believe that suspension is a cure-all, but it is an essential tool for the safety and stabilization. We require flexibility to use suspensions in unique cases to repair the environment for the victims and the witnesses, to conduct intensive planning with families and staff to prevent the reoccurrence, and to coordinate high levels of external resources for the students in crisis. The current prohibition on suspensions for students below fourth grade has removed our ability to effectively manage these crises. It is important to provide immediate intensive, it is impossible to provide immediate intensive supervision while also simultaneously drafting the long-term plan required for a student's success. I ask that you restore administrative discretion to ensure our schools remain safe, nurturing environments for all students.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you. Mr. Shaver and Ms. Peterson. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shaver.
Chair Cresha, members of the committee, good afternoon. Matt Shaver at Allies. I'm a licensed elementary school teacher and dad of a kindergartner. We appreciate Representative Lawrence's efforts to take an evidence-based approach to school safety, like providing safety funding for all students and creating school safety plans and anonymous reporting systems. Here's the evidence on suspensions. Students who are suspended are more likely to be suspended again, more likely to become chronically absent, more likely to not read or do math at grade level, more likely to drop out, and more likely to become involved with law enforcement. with a disproportionate use of suspensions on students of color, low-income students, and students with disabilities here in Minnesota. It's a good thing from a policy perspective to put system-wide expectations and limits in place to lessen the likelihood of all of those negative outcomes for kids. No doubt it is harder to have students work through their behavior mistakes at school than it is to send them home, but six-year-olds need to be taught how to behave in school. Our youngest learners, because they are our youngest learners, deserve a fresh start in school each day. The limits set in 2023 provide that fresh start, and unfortunately this proposal would take them away. Advance policies aligned to evidence. Don't advance policies where the evidence points towards harmful outcomes for children. Thank you for your time today and your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Ms. Peterson.
My name is Shannon Peterson. I'm the Executive Director of Lakes International Language Academy, or LILA, in Forest Lake. I'm here to voice support for HF 3493 and the amendment that appropriates $68 per pupil and specifically includes charter public schools. LILA's elementary school exists in a former hospital. All ground floor classrooms have big pre-energy crisis 1960s era windows. When the new fire marshal required our curtains to be removed, we wanted to replace them immediately with a fire-safe version, but the cost was more than a teacher's salary. As a charter school receiving no safety aid and only 70% of the public funding of a district school, that is our choice. Reduce teachers if we want curtains. So we decided to learn to live with the sun in our eyes and the glare on our whiteboards. Then, this past fall, when the Annunciation shooter made the atypical mood of attacking from outside the building, our lack of curtains became a much bigger problem, affecting the well-being of our community. Teachers on the ground floor are fearful for their students. Their fear is constant, but is voiced more loudly each time we do a lockdown drill. Thank you for your including the ongoing safety funding in HF 3493.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Brown and Ms. Schneider. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, Ms. Brown.
Hi, my name is Judy Brown. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and committee members. I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker, a member of MNSWA Legislative Committee, and the manager of the Mental Health Supports Department for Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm here to share our concerns regarding proposed adjustments to student support personnel aid in the amendment to HF 393494. School social workers foster student success through prevention, crisis intervention, and trauma-informed care. While mental health intersects with school safeties, these roles are fundamentally different. Research shows that increasing mental health resources, not just security, is what truly reduces disciplinary issues. For this reason, it is vital to keep these funding streams distinct. Because of the state's recent investment in student support personnel, we are finally making progress in reducing caseloads. We are meeting needs in real time. To illustrate, just a few weeks ago, I led a team of social workers in supporting students traumatized by a horrific incident. A student experiencing a significant mental health issue jumped from a third floor balcony into a cafeteria commons area. At the end of the day of school as students passed by and witnessed it. Our staff is working tirelessly, quite literally, to keep students from jumping off the ledges. This student is alive today because social workers had the time and resources to build strong relationships with students, not just students and families. The student called her dad and texted her dad and sent goodbye messages. The school's social worker and principal ran to get the student, met the student with the father, and the student jumped in front of everyone. So she had support there around her, trusted relationships with people that she could depend on to help her. But guess what? It wasn't enough. There's not enough people to do this work. So I'm saying that to say that this student is alive today because of the social workers and time that we have to build relationships with these students that are on the edge of crisis. And we have to be also really honest with the fact that when we talk about school violence, guns don't shoot themselves. Hurt people, period. And no matter what type of technology you have, it's not going to prevent or be able to build a relationship with the student to help persuade them from jumping from a third floor window or from harming someone else.
And okay. Ms. Brown, I do need to ask you to wrap it up. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you.
Yeah. Oh, I'm up here.
Oh, sorry. So on a technical note, amendment starting on line 2.1 conflicts with Minnesota 2451. It incorrectly limits the term mental health professional to 3 school licensees under the state standards. The title is protected statutory designation for clinical disciplines. Using it here confuses clinical standards with educational supports. We urge the legislature to protect the current formula and maintain distinct funding for student support personnel. This ensures that both mental health and safety needs are met without compromising either. Thank you for your time in recognizing our expertise as critical resources for families. And I apologize if I went over.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Schneider.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder, speaking for Education Minnesota. On my first point, I'm also speaking for the Minnesota School Counselors Association. My apologies for my prop here. I have the crud that's going around, and I'm trying really hard not to be patient zero. Following up on the last testifier's comments, I'd like to first talk about the flexibility that this bill, that this DE has for student support personnel aid. Almost every dollar that goes to a school district is flexible. Basic skills, compensatory, general education. You could use funding from your community ed program to fund school staff to the extent that they're working with people in an ECFE class. But year after year, what we see is fewer and fewer people, like the testifier beside me, meeting the needs of our students. You could also use special education funding to fund school social workers, school counselors, school psychologists, and school nurses to the extent that they're working with our special ed kiddos. But every year, we don't see that happening. And that is why, for 10 years, advocates worked to pass student support personnel ed and say, this one pot of money, 30-some dollars per kid, that has to go to this group of folks. Moving on, Education Minnesota has a legislative position in support of ending disparities in education. So we're very concerned about the repealer in Section 10. This says that you don't have to use non-exclusionary discipline with our K-3 students. Every administrator I've ever talked to says, of course, we're using non-exclusionary disciplinary practices. So to see that repealed, that seems unnecessary and overblown in this reaction. We have strong concerns about funding our private schools. We believe public funds should go to public programs. And lastly, if you consider this bill sort of a wish list of what half of the committee would like to move into law, it's disappointing to not see compensatory revenue part of that wish list. The cuts that are coming to compensatory because of a misunderstanding of statute, in my opinion, they're going to hurt blue districts, they're going to hurt red districts, they're going to hurt purple districts. I'd really like the committee to consider that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and I hope you feel better. Thank you. With that, members, I have Ms. Luger, and then I have 3 online testifiers signed up. Ms. Luger, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Claire Luger, and I am a special education teacher in White Bear Lake Area Schools and a proud parent of 3 Forest Lake Area Schools graduates where I actually started my teaching career. To be very clear, to be absolutely crystal clear, every single student in the state of Minnesota deserves to be safe in their schools. Students cannot learn without feeling safe. I am here, however, to speak in opposition to the subdivisions in this bill that would provide public money to non-public schools, because public schools are not only responsible for all students and have far more costly mandates that require public levies to keep up with the special education services that my colleagues and I, for example, provide to students with disabilities in private schools, as well as in my home district of Forest Lake, the funding that we need to pull from our general budget because our transportation funding isn't equitable. Our public schools need more, not less. As an elected community member, I assure you that the hardworking taxpayers of Minnesota want their tax dollars invested in their own schools and their own communities, because strong public schools make strong communities. It does not make sense for the state to direct public school money to unaccountable and unregulated non-public schools. Public money should be for public schools, period. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And with that, members, we're going to move on to our online testifiers. I do have three, and one of those is Fatima Molas, who, if you're online, we'll move to you first.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and the committee members. My name is Fatima Molas. I'm a mother of a child with autism and the co-founder of the Multicultural Autism Action Network, MAN. I'm here today to strongly oppose House File 3493. As the parent of a child with profound autism, I have seen the harm suspension has caused. My child has been punished for behaviors related to his disability, leading to emotional and psychological trauma. Young children, especially those with disabilities, need support, not exclusion. Suspensions does not teach skills or improve behaviors. It only causes harm. We must invest in training and supportive evidence-based approaches, not push children out of school. I respectfully urge you to oppose House File 3493. Thank you.
Thank you, and I understand you have a young one that may be ill, so I hope that illness passes soon. Ms. Bernhardt, and then Mr. Campa.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Bernhardt. I am a nationally certified school psychologist, licensed and practicing in Minnesota. I'm also an elected board member of the Minnesota School Psychologists Association, or MSPA, and I am testifying today on behalf of MSPA. MSPA supports the school safety planning and behavioral health investments in HF 3493 D E1. We support the provisions that strengthen the evidence-based school safety planning, require consultation with licensed school mental health professionals, and expand school-linked behavioral health supports. Those are meaningful, prevention-focused investments in student well-being. However, MSPA respectfully asks the committee to remove Section 4 and Sections 3 and 10 related to K-3 discipline changes. First, current Minnesota law created student support personnel to aid to address shortages and reduce caseloads. House research indicates DE1 would allow that aid to be used for any safe school's purpose. Minnesota still faces major workforce shortages. Our current school psych ratio is 1 to 1,000. And 47, while nationally the recommendation is 1 to 500. I want to briefly share why this is not just a statistic to me personally. Early in my career, I lost a student to suicide. That student had been identified as needing support and was awaiting referral to me, and the referral was delayed because our district was experiencing a severe shortage of school psychologists. I carry that loss with me every day, and it is part of why I'm standing here today. Excuse me. Workforce shortages are not an abstract policy problem. They have real, permanent consequences for real children and families. These dollars should remain tied to hiring and retaining school student support, licensed student support professionals at a minimum until a district can provide a clear set of documentation that shows it has at least resolved the shortages within its own district that this funding was designed to address. If they can demonstrate that the original goal of student support personnel funding has been met, that's a different story. But this funding was appropriated for a need that is broadly still unmet in the state and should be preserved in its current form to the greatest extent possible. Second, D1 would weaken current protections for our youngest learners by allowing kindergarten through grade 3 dismissals for up to 3 school days and rolling back non-exclusionary discipline requirements. That moves us away from developmentally appropriate preventative practice. This will disenfranchise underprivileged children and families and represents a likely source of unintended harm to children with disabilities and their families. MSPA respectfully asks you to preserve the positive school safety investments in this bill while removing those two provisions. Thank you for your time and consideration.
And thank you for your testimony. Our final remote testifier is Mr. Campa.
Thank you, Chair Kresha and Chair Joachim and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. My name is Chris Campa. I'm the Director of Finance and Operations for Cambridge Isani Schools. I'm sorry I'm not there in person, but I will work to make this quick. And I want to start with a straightforward reality. General education funding has lost about 20% of its value over the past 20 years. To get back to where we were, the basic formula would need to increase by about $1,420 per pupil. Now, at the same time, total education funding has gone up, and I think that's important to acknowledge that it has increased, but that funding has not gone into the classroom. It's been redirected into mandates and categorical programs. And a lot of those fun, good, and necessary things, special education, mental health, social services, and those are important. But whether or not they're fully funded or not, districts are required to do them. And the more that gets shifted into those areas, the less flexibility we have in the classroom. And what does that look like in practice? It means trade-offs. Larger class sizes, fewer programs, delayed curriculum updates, and in many cases, asking local taxpayers to make up the difference. Safety and security is a good example of that, where expectations keep growing, and it is a real and growing need, and I wish that wasn't the case, but it is. The Core Safe Schools funding formula has stayed flat at $36 for over a decade on a per-student basis, and it hasn't kept pace. For our district alone, that's a gap of $100,000, and it's hard to make those needed investments into your core safety costs when your basic needs aren't being covered. So additional funding in this area would help us meet those expectations without pulling more resources out of the classroom. Thank you for your time.
And thank you very much, Mr. Campa, for your testimony. And with that, members, thank you very much. And to the testifiers, thank you. I'd like to go to member questions. I do have a short list started already. So Representative Sensenmayer, you're the first one.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill, Representative Lawrence. I have a couple comments and then some questions. So there's a lot to this bill. You know, I think the first thing that I want to talk about is the flexibility around the student support personnel aid. I have deep concerns around that. You know, I presented a bill earlier in session to increase that aid. I think that that is certainly what I'm hearing from my own district, but people across the state in relation to just the trauma that our young people have been through. I feel like every committee meeting we have young people who are coming before us and telling us, I am not okay. That story that we heard today from Judy Brown about a student literally, you know, jumping in front of other students, I can't think of a more kind of stark image of a kid saying, I'm not okay, I need help, I need support. So I think raiding that pot of money for anything is not what we should be doing right now. You know, just to give one kind of specific example from my district, Minneapolis, one of the biggest districts in the state, you know, I have had high school students that I've been meeting with who are really concerned just about the amount of alcohol and drug use that they are seeing at their school. One of the kind of reverberating issues of that is that the bathrooms keep getting shut down because kids are going to the bathroom, they are vaping, they're doing other things. And so what I learned from that is that in Minneapolis, you know, one of the largest districts, 8 high schools, there's only 1 licensed and drug and alcohol counselor for the entire district, right? So that means that that counselor probably spends a half day at their school a week, which is absolutely not enough time to be able to really support those students to change that culture, which is then leading to bathrooms that are literally shut down. So I do not think we should be raiding that fund of money. I have real concerns about that. The other thing that I want to address that I really appreciated, the note that we have in our packet from the CASA conference, you know, talking about a multi-tiered approach to protecting our children. And the number one thing that they have is give more kids a chance, ban high-capacity ammunition magazines. I really don't think we can be having this conversation about school safety and the hardening of our schools without being really direct about what we are hardening our schools against. And it is guns, and it is guns that can hurt a lot of young people really quickly, and I think it makes a lot of sense to try and stop that. So I would have really wanted to see that in this approach. The last thing that I wanted to talk about and have questions about is non-exclusionary discipline and the changes that you're proposing around suspension. So I think we heard a lot of compelling testimony. I appreciated Matt Shaver talking about kind of what does the research tell us about suspensions, what are the lasting consequences if kids get suspension, what is the message that is telling a kid about what their place is in school. So I have a lot of concerns about changing that policy, especially for our youngest learners. I know that I have had, you know, talks with administrators in my district who have asked for more clarity about the language. I know Representative Ray Rauer has been, you know, working on, can we give more guidance and clarity, you know, that tells administrators when this is a tool that they can use. But this approach to me seems very extreme. I think two changes that you're making that I wanted to ask about. So the first one is, you know, you're getting rid of the language that is saying that schools need to exhaust all other options before suspensions. And I think one of the testifiers, you know, mentioned that we continually hear from administrators that they do that anyways, right? That they are trying everything before they are kicking a kid out of the classroom. So if that is the case, and I do believe that, like, why are we getting rid of that language that is just making sure that all other tools are being used before we are sending a kid away? And then I have questions about the 3 days piece of it as well. 3 days is a lot of time out of the classroom. 3 days not learning, being at home is a lot of time of, you know, for a kid to be away from school. I think particularly about young people and how, you know, transitions are hard for them 3 days out, then trying to bring them back into the fold. That seems like a really long time. So if you could address those two pieces, thank you.
And thank you for that. And members, just to let you know, we do have about 10 minutes, so I want to make sure I get to the six on the list. Representative Lawrence, your response.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much, and I appreciate you sharing the concerns. With that, I want you to know that I'm happy to have those conversations, right? I'm willing to talk about those things. I think we've got a great foundation for a bill to go forward. As you kind of made reference to, is there's combinations from both sides that are included in this bill. And one of the things I want to touch on, I know you gave specific questions, but you mentioned the mental health piece. That's included in here. Is it enough money? I don't know. That's something we can discuss. But there are dollars that are set aside for additional mental health. We also brought the flexibility piece in for schools that are saying, we need some flexibility with it. Not all schools are going to utilize that, but some schools could use that flexibility within their districts, and so we put that there. You talked about as far as the behavioral side of things, and we heard testimony on both sides today. We need to address that. But in the same tone, I think, I believe, you know, we need to look at both sides and offer opportunities and options for both sides. And a one-size-fits-all isn't always the case that works best. We heard testimony from schools that we need a break period where we can discuss and come up with a plan. We need that timetable. Is 3 days too much for that? Maybe, right? But let's have that conversation. Let's talk about that. But let's put the options out there that helps our schools and our students at the end of the day.
Representative Sensenmayer, quick follow-up.
Yeah, I would just love for you to talk about why are you getting rid of the language around exhausting all other options before a suspension?
And Representative Lawrence, go ahead.
Yep, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Like I said, it's one of those things that we can discuss going in. The reason we're putting it in there as of right now is what we've heard, what we've discussed, you know, what we've heard from both, from our side, I'm going to say, from students, right, from students and teachers as far as options to help bring things to the table. And so at the end of the day, I think all of us hear that teachers, administrative staff are exhausting all options anyways at this point in time. So I think it winds up being more of a non-issue factor, but part of the solution to helping kids and teachers.
Thank you. Do you have a quick follow-up? Otherwise, Representative Hill, I'd like to go to you next.
Thank you, Chair Carisha, and thank you, Representative Lawrence, for bringing the bill, continuing the dialogue around this critically important question. How do we keep all of our students safe? Representative Sensenmayer said, there's an awful lot happening in this bill, all coming at us all at once. Some I love, some I have concerns about. And in particular, one area I have concerns about is the dissolving of student support personnel aid that was put in place to ensure that our students have ample access to counselors, to school nurses, to social workers, and chemical dependency counselors in our school sites, at our school sites, and allowing for districts instead to use that to fortify a building, creating a fortress of sorts, is concerning to me. Because as a school teacher for the last 26 years, I know that the most effective tool against students becoming violent is that they have a strong relationship with somebody at their school, an adult at their school. The more eyes and the more hands on deck we can have in our public schools, the safer our schools become. And so it becomes a question of what do we want our students to experience at school? Do we want them to experience entering into a quote-unquote hardened complex, or do we want them to experience a caring and supportive environment where they are known, where they are supported, and where they are taken care of? And so the question would be, do you understand the complexity around that trade-off? Because funding is a challenge this session. And allowing students, districts and charters to move away from having those professionals on site to care for our kids and to educate our kids, to put in bulletproof glass or other features that would harden the structure, comes at quite a cost. And just wanted to hear a few comments from your perspective on that.
Representative Lawrence.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Hill. And I'm glad you bring up the funding, because I think that's an important aspect that we don't talk enough about. We're in the funding committee here. You know, we're education funding. And there's no question in my mind that once we make this a priority, which I'm proposing today, to make these things a priority, we'll find the funding together. We'll be able to find the funding to the concerns that have been mentioned, to put forward to make our schools safer. I think this is one of the biggest issues that at the beginning of session came to us, and we need to deliver on. We need to do something that makes our schools safer. You're right, I got a lot of different things in here. All relate to school safety. Some things relate to making the school a safer physical environment. Some relate to personnel, bringing personnel that help make the school a safer. Some relate to students being able to be a part of making their school safer by the anonymous reporting. So there's factors in here that I think move us in that direction of making schools safer, and I know that we can find the funding for it. This is an important issue. We need to move this forward, and we need to work together to move these subjects. I'm open to those discussions, okay, of how do we do it, but fundamentally, we've got a good foundation here to go forward with.
Representative Green.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, Representative Lawrence, for bringing the bill forward. I see elements of many of the bills that I have brought forward in this bill, so I do support those elements in here. I want to correct something, though, that you said with all due respect. You know, we've talked about school safety well before the start of this session, mm-hmm. right? We've had bills that have come last session well before you and I were elected here even, right? So this has been an ongoing conversation in how we have a comprehensive approach to school safety. And this has been talked about from my colleagues as well, but one of the big things that I'm very concerned with, and I'm not quite sure how you square this up, is the student support personnel aid and moving those dedicated sources for students. When we hear from administrators and teachers and students that is like such a critical need and a piece of this. You know, we talk about making sure that our students and that whole student is supported so that we don't have students that are hurting. And, you know, that was my question to you. We can talk about it offline too. I know you've responded some before, so I want to be respectful of that. The other piece in here that I just want to acknowledge is the anonymous reporting piece. You know, we've seen several different bills, both in education policy and in here, to talk about that. One of the things that I'm concerned about in this bill is the word encouraged, which is in statute. I feel like when we're just encouraging something, that to me doesn't necessarily mean it is law. I know it's in there in a lot of different, I've seen it in a lot of different places as I've been in this role, but here, anonymous reporting is a super effective way that we can help kids. It has been proven. We've heard the Sandy Hook promise. And so I would think that part of the bill doesn't go far enough in making sure that we are actually supporting funding and saying this is an important element that we have to have in place. I was with students yesterday, and they brought this up, that it has become a very trusted source for students. And to have that breakthrough, that students have somewhere that they can trust and go to, and that this anonymous reporting system works, is very effective. So it needs to go further than what it is in this bill. So you can respond, or we can talk offline.
Representative Lawrence, if you can do that offline, that'd be great. Thank you. I have Representative Lee Perez-Vega and Ray Rauer. And then we'll go to Bakeberg and Joachim. So if you can help me with the time, that'd be great. Representative Lee.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So less questions for the author and maybe just more comments because we don't have a lot of time.
Thank you.
You know, I think for me, it's very concerning that this piece of legislation is supposedly about school safety, but as numerous witnesses had pointed out in their testimony, you know, it seeks to address a very real issue that adults should be solving by instead punishing student behaviors. Also, instead of addressing gun violence, this tells our students that they are the criminals. And to make things worse, instead of proposing a funding mechanism that would work, this bill takes money away from student support personnel aid, which would actually help students' mental health and provide them those much-needed support that they require. And I'm just disappointed to hear that this is a conversation starter, because if it is one, this is a very bad start. The author told us that this is a finance committee, so you know we need, and we our students deserve proposals that come with financing ideas, not stealing from other important programs. We still don't have a budget for the a target for the committee because our speaker is running for governor, and it's not to her advantage to have a budget deal. So
please keep to the bill.
Yeah. But let's be clear, right? We don't have a target for our committee. And so, you know, if we're going to be an education finance committee, you know, how are we financing these ideas? My proposal is, you know, we should be expanding the pie and raising revenues, right? But this steals from really important programs that would actually support our students. So thanks.
Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Bill authors, so I just want to bring us back to a few weeks ago when we had the Violence Prevention Project here giving testimony. And I think when we approach these, you know, very serious problems, we need to do so with evidence-based research that indicates what will work well. From their research, we know that mass school shootings where four or more killed, that shooters are insiders, 80%. Shooters are in crisis, over 80% show signs. Shooters tell others, 94%. Shooters use the guns of family or friends, 59%. Therefore, hardening schools alone is not an answer because most shooters have already been through the school security and the school lockdown drills and know how to get around them. Therefore, extreme risk protection orders alone don't work. We also need secure storage of guns because shooters may take one from a friend. So we need a layered approach that includes these things, but also crisis intervention, anonymous threat reporting systems, and behavioral threat assessment teams that are in our schools that can work together to help prevent these horrible tragedies. For these to work, we've got to have our mental health professionals in our schools, and unfortunately, this bill could take money away from that. In your bill, the anonymous threat reporting system language unfortunately only encourages school districts to use one. I believe we should be requiring all districts to use one. The data from Sandy Hook Promise, again, research-based data, is very clear. They do work. They prevent violence and they save kids' lives. We have a great option available to all school districts right now that don't have a system through the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension that could be used with no cost to schools, which is why I believe we can make this a requirement. I believe you brought forward the bill with good intentions, but it needs changes and it needs some additional work. But thank you for your good intentions.
Thank you, Representative Rehrer, and Representative Perez-Vega, and then Representative Bakeford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for this conversation. I'm thinking really closely as a mom to a first grader, and I've seen her as a member of this body enter preschool, and you know I love my preschoolers. I have deep concerns of the discipline rollback that it's going to have in the development of our early kids, our early elementary care students. I have this experience as a mom and as a lawmaker who listens to my child, who's the compass of the direction, and listens to her classmates and her educators and personal aid providers in the schools. Think about an experience, and I was actually at the school that Representative Mary Clardy used to teach at as a guest speaker to their Spanish class. And in the middle, I received a call from my daughter's school that I had to rush to get to there because my daughter had been hit in the face by another classmate. She was okay, thankfully, but as the mom, I wanted to ensure that my daughter was okay. I went to the school, not with the deep concern of, we've got to take care of what's happening here and where's the other parent. It was more of, one, is she okay? And two, is that other child okay? Because it's a kid. I spoke with the administration and, you know, with, I'm not giving the consent, I don't have the consent to share the child's name, and I want to protect that child as well, because that's what the kid was venting on. And my daughter's response was not, I don't want my classmate to be in the class anymore, or I'm scared. It was, are they going to be okay? Are they going to be in trouble? Are they going to be allowed to be back into the classroom? My kid, who was a victim, was concerned about another kid, because it was quite efficiently, profoundly to know that this kid needed more support. The classroom was needing more support. The educators, the teachers, the personnel ed, this is a friend. Okay, this is a child. This is a kid. Right away, the victim of the, so to say, disruption and violent act that happened didn't say, keep them away or I don't want them in the class. They said, they need help. This bill is taking away the accessibility of those personal aides to come and help the classroom. That child who did the action that was a scary action, no parent wants to get that call that your kid has been hurt. But also, it was also a cry for help from this kid that they're being hurt. They're being hurt by a system that's not giving them support as they are a special needs kid. And their parents need the help. And that is what we're here to do in Ed Finance, is figure out an ecosystem of solutions that are going to finance the support of the well-being of everyone in the school's environment. And with that, I just can't see this being that opportunity to take a kid out of the class for 3 days. However, is it 3 days? May I ask that question? How many is the days that this kid who would be a preschooler would have to be suspended?
Representative Lawrence, quickly.
I believe it is 3 days.
Yeah, see.
Representative Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Within that weekend of conversation of what it took for our school to volunteer, because I believe that we have to work through this as a school, I don't want my kid to miss out an opportunity to not have their friend who is crying for help. We need to come as an environment for the school to be able to deliver this help, and that's not what this bill does. No further questions.
Thank you. Representative Bakeberg, then Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lots and lots of thoughts, but first, Representative Lawrence, thank you for bringing a bill that increases funding to our schools by $50 million. That's what this bill does. Increases flexible funding by $50 million to our local schools. So it's not cutting funding. And it provides a layered approach to school safety for all kids. Super simple. All kids, wherever, regardless of where you go, you should be able to feel safe. Representative Perez-Vega highlighted actually very well how amazing our school staff do in making sure our kids feel safe. And she laid out how they use something called restorative practices to repair when something happens. And our schools are using layered approaches, using ongoing intervention to be able to make sure kids are safe. Okay, that's what they do every day, every single day. And it says up to 3 days. All they're asking for is time to plan, time to be able to support the kid who was hurt, and time to be able to plan to support the student who is dysregulated, who is struggling, because behavior is communication. But all this bill does is provides time to plan to make sure our kids are safe in school and our educators. Because we heard from one of our testifiers that there were 133 evacuations in the Anoka-Hennepin District. So that means, just so that you're all aware what happens, a classroom is destroyed. Imagine this room, all these tables flipped over, papers thrown everywhere. That is what is happening. That's the reality of what the schools are dealing with. So a room is destroyed. The teacher stops instruction for the other 25 kids and brings them to another environment, usually the hallway. And the teacher is supposed to just pretend that what happened didn't just happen and continue on teaching.
So we talk about lost instructional time. That's a ton of lost instructional time. Then we had 157 staff, and I think it was 110 at the K-3 level, of staff that were hurt by kids. Because our teachers are putting themselves in situations to protect other kids. When computers are thrown, when desks are flipped over, our teachers are stepping in and protecting. Our administrators are stepping in and protecting. That's what this bill does. It's super simple. The provision in this bill, do we want to keep all kids safe? Super simple. Do we want to listen to activists? Like, I'm so tired of hearing the same testimony over and over about specifically the K-3 provisions. Or do we want to listen to actual educators? The educators are coming and telling us, please help us. We talk about retention. You want to talk about retention? Let's respect them enough to actually listen to them. And I would leave you with this. If it's a good idea, you don't have to mandate it. And I would request a roll call.
Roll call requested, roll call granted. Chair Joachim to close.
Thank you, Chair Kreisha. We've worked really well together during this session and last session as we've waited to see the direction our leadership would take with targets. We've been told that anything we want to fund needs to be paid for within our current committee budgets. The bill before us does not do that. It cancels money in the transportation bill to pay for half the cost of this bill. And I have really lost track of how many times your side of the aisle has utilized the NLX money. It kind of reminds me of my favorite parable growing up of loaves and fishes, like they magically appear everywhere. So, this NLX money has been used 100 times over in very many proposals. So it's hard to take that part seriously. I also take a little umbrage with Representative Bakeberg, co-vice chair Bakeberg, who is a principal, you saying that parents are activists. Parents are here to talk about their kids. So that is a little concerning. But I'm also very concerned, as we've talked about and we've heard from many of our licensed professionals in our schools, those folks we should listen to, that taking away and transferring the student support personnel aid by a board vote to harden our schools is not the way to go. I'm so glad folks really listened when we had the Gun Violence Prevention Resource Center in to talk about what keeping kids safe in our schools look like. And you're right, it is a multi-layered approach, but that approach starts with people in our schools. Because as Representative Ray Rauer so bluntly pointed out, most of the shootings start with students in our schools or who have been in our schools. So making sure they have those wraparound services is exactly why we've created the Student Support Personnel Aid. Funding that had been worked on for years to make sure we could have more school counselors, nurses, social workers, and psychologists in our schools to take care of our kids. We have a 750-to-1 ratio in Minnesota for counselors. It's recommended to be 250-to-1. Our students deserve better, and they've been asking for that. They've been asking for those mental support helps. They've been asking for that, those wraparound services. And the provision of repealing the K-3 suspensions and changing the non-exclusionary disciplines, sometimes we do have to put things in statute for them to follow. I believe our schools are following those statutes. And we might be able to have a discussion on clarifying them, which I believe Representative Bakeberg is very interested in, and so is Representative Ray Rauer. But a complete repeal in a bill that you're calling school safety makes it look like you're criminalizing our students. I finally want to say that I appreciate the language around the anonymous reporting and the school safety plans. I know there's quite a few people in our caucus that have worked on it between Representative Ray Rauer, Representative Ream, Representative Nadeau, Representative Curran. And I appreciate the start of the language in this bill, but it is still a may. A may is what can already happen, and it's not in all of our schools. It needs to be a must. This bill is not what we need to make change happen in our schools now. It doesn't make our kids safer or our schools better prepared to tackle an emergency. I'm going to have to ask our members to vote no on the bill, but I have to also say I'm happy that we're finally having this discussion. I'm sad that it took until the last week of deadline week to have this discussion when we started it at the beginning. So I look forward to our rollout of a school safety bill on Thursday and having further discussions. Members, I'd ask you to vote no.
Closing comments, Representative Lawrence.
Chair Carisha, Chair Youakim, fellow members, I'm honored to have the opportunity to present this bill before you. It has been stated numerous times, they're not my ideas, but many individuals from this committee have brought parts and pieces to this that have compiled into this bill. And I think it comes to the table as a very, probably not perfect in most people's eyes, but a very bipartisan bill to present before this committee today. A lot of concerns have been mentioned as well. Funding flow, funding sources, student discipline. Let's have those conversations. Let's pass this bill today and have those conversations as it goes forward to Ways and Means. And so I thank you. I renew my motion on 3493 as amended to refer to the Committee of Ways and Means. I ask the committee to vote yes so we can continue this conversation and at the end of the day put a safe schools bill forward. My fundamental goal is simple. Protect every student in every school. Thank you.
Ms. Bolka will take the roll.
Chair Carisha.
Aye.
Chair Youakim.
No.
Vice Chair Baikburn.
Yes.
Vice Chair Clardy.
No.
Representative Altendorf.
Yes.
Bonner.
No.
Bennett.
Aye.
DePell.
Aye.
Gander.
Aye.
Gordon.
Aye.
Green.
No.
Hill.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Lee.
No.
Knutson.
Yes.
Lawrence.
Yes.
Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Perez Vega.
Perez Vega, no.
Quam.
Yes.
Ream.
Ream, no.
Ray Rauer.
No.
Reimer.
Aye.
Sensor Mira.
No.
Vernig.
No.
Members not receiving the necessary 13 bills in favor of the motion does not prevail. House file 3494-93 as amended is laid over. Members, we're going to move on to House File 4114, Representative Baker. Thank you for your bill, Representative Lawrence. And members, I apologize. I let the conversation go, but we're going to keep our testifiers to 1 minute as well on this and get us back on track. And I've invited Representative Hicks to co-present. So, Representative Baikburg, you have the bill in front of us. So, the next bill is 4114. Representative Baikburg moves... moves House File 4114 before the committee for re-referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Baikburg, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Co-Chair Youakim, members, and want to just thank Representative Hicks for co-presenting on this important bipartisan bill. Representative Hill, I saw you signed on, so I appreciate that as well. Just to note, since we've posted this bill that we're going to have a hearing, we've had 214 people submit testimony about their support of this bill, or 214 different letters, and about 928 different people are in support of this. So we look at just very broad bipartisan support. So the current law requires schools across the state to assume a $250 million reduction in special education aid unless the savings are found by policy changes via the Blue Ribbon Commission. If the savings are not achieved through policy changes, the Commissioner of Education is required to automatically reduce funding to our schools via the cross-subsidy formula. Let's be clear. This is a cut to our local schools on top of the current struggle our schools are facing right now. So what House File 4114 does is it repeals the $250 million contingent reduction while respecting the work that the Blue Ribbon Commission is doing, and then those findings will come before this body. Members, we also need to be honest about the broader budget picture. The governor has pushed for $430 million in cuts to schools, including $250 million in the Blue Ribbon Commission, and an additional $50 million, bringing the total of $300 million in cuts to special education, which will result in a general education cut. The part that is most maddening is the governor has pushed this while increasing funding to the Department of Education. That is misplaced priorities. At a time when schools are facing rising special ed costs, staffing shortages, and growing student needs, we should not be layering automatic cuts and uncertainty onto our schools. We should be supporting our schools and giving them the funding and the flexibility to meet their local needs. That's what House File 4114 does. It provides stability, removes the automatic cut, and ensures that decisions are made at the through the legislative process. So with that, I would turn it over to my co-presenter.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg and Representative Hicks. And we do have a lot of testifiers I'd love to get to. It's a public meeting. So Representative Hicks.
I will be brief because I would also like you to hear from the testifiers.
Thank you.
I think their experience is incredibly important. I am mother of a bazillion children, and many of them have IEPs. And I have had the both wonderful and frustrating experience of navigating that system when there are not appropriate resources. Taking away resources from a group of our most vulnerable students is not how we move this state forward into full inclusion. People with disabilities have a right, and we as legislators have a responsibility to ensure that they are included throughout the lifespan, from the cradle to the grave. And when we start cutting what they need to be included in general education settings, in our schools, we begin the process of community-based institutionalization. We cannot do that now in schools because we will pay for it later. When students do not have what they need to be successful in community, we will pay for it later. We have a legal responsibility to provide those supports, both federally and in our state. But we have a moral responsibility to prioritize our most vulnerable. So thank you all for hearing this, and I'm excited for you to hear from our testifiers.
Thank you. And with that, Ms. Mitchell and Ms. Sherman.
Mr. Chair, while our testifiers are coming up, may I ask for a roll call, please, for this?
Roll call requested, roll call granted. All right. And just for time's sake, I'm sorry, if I could bring your chair a little closer. Go ahead and start your testimony.
Great. Good
afternoon. Say your name and begin.
Yes. Good afternoon, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Allison Sherman. I serve as school board chair in Stillwater Area Public Schools and chair of AMSD. I'm here to support this bill and the repeal of the $250 million in special education cuts. In Stillwater Area, one in five students receive special education services, all of which are legally mandated and increasingly expensive to provide. In my district, we have reduced $12 million over the last 3 years, cuts to staff, programs, and student supports. Special education is the fastest growing mandated cost we have. When funding does not keep pace, districts are forced to backfill with general education dollars, reducing services that support all students. The reality is this, the mandates have not changed. We are still required to provide the same services, but with less funding in a time when student needs are increasing. Another challenge really quickly that we are experiencing is reduced access to studying for intermediate district programming. And as those highly specialized placements become more limited, more students with significant needs are being served within our buildings, and that comes at a cost as well. Again, we are in support of HF 4114, and I hope that there's bipartisan support to get this done. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell.
Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Shannon Mitchell, and I work for the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We represent 170 charter schools across the state, and these schools serve approximately 12,000 children with disabilities, or roughly 17% of the charter school population, which is similar to the broader public school percentage. I want to start by acknowledging we know that the state faces really difficult financial realities, and as a result, you all have to make extremely difficult decisions. But at the same time, our schools are already feeling the special education cuts that were passed last year. Leaders are already making difficult trade-offs, such as reducing the number of special education teachers, and results in increasing caseloads and burnout. And so while we appreciate the intent of the Blue Ribbon Commission in terms of examining cost drivers and identifying real solutions, these solutions take time, and sometimes they require upfront investments, such as high quality early interventions. We are committed to that type of work, but we don't think this approach is the right approach. It's a blunt approach to a problem that requires precision and could cause real harm to kids and could actually increase costs over time.
charter schools have to accept all students regardless of the level of needs that they have. And if they don't have the program, they have to build it. So we would just say that this is not the right approach, and we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Maren Hofer and Justin Killian. Dr. Killian, my apologies. And then it'll be Nicole Woodard and Laura Jean. Dr. Killian.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Joachim, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Justin Killian with Education Minnesota. I'm also one of the appointed members of the Blue Ribbon Commission on Special Education. I'm here to speak in favor of Rep. Berg's bill that repeals these terrible cuts to special education. I just want to remind us what the Blue Ribbon Commission has been asked to do. We've been asked to balance the entire state budget on the back of special education teachers and students. Just let that sit with you. Let that sink in for a second, what you're asking us to do. And so I thank you for having the bravery to repeal that. I also thank you for speaking out against the additional $50 million target that's been put before us. And I'd also just like to remind everybody that the state of Minnesota has something called maintenance of fiscal support, or also known as maintenance of effort, that hasn't entered this conversation. But we could be in serious trouble with the federal government if these cuts go forward. And that's a conversation that this group of people needs to have with the experts at the Department of Education.
Thank you, Ms. Hofer.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Maren Christensen Hofer. I'm a parent and I also serve with the Multicultural Autism Action Network, and I will say I'm sometimes an activist as well. I'm here to testify in favor of the bill, and we really appreciate Representative Bakeberg bringing it. As others have spoken before, special education should not be the place that we're looking for cuts now. We're seeing overwhelming needs. We're seeing increased kids coming into the system. We're seeing a lot of mental health needs. We're seeing more cuts from the federal government. Like, this is not the time to be making cuts, and this is not the place. The Blue Ribbon Commission has been tasked with a thoughtful process to come up with suggestions about ways that we might be able to save some costs. Please let them do their job. We need to engage with families, and they need to be part of this conversation. We thank Representative Bakeberg for bringing this bill, and it has our full support. Thank you.
Thank you. Nicole Woodward and Laura Jean.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Woodward. I'm the executive director of the St. Croix River Education District, proudly serving school districts across Pine and Chisago counties in greater Minnesota. Cross-subsidy is a major issue in my districts. Recent aid increases have reduced our cross-subsidy gap from $10.4 million in FY23 to $6.8 million in FY25. Great relief, still a financial strain. From my perspective as a special ed administrator, continued increases in costs result from three main issues. First and foremost, we are serving more students with increasingly complex needs. Since 2021, the number of students with disabilities in my system increased from 1,800 to over 1,900. That's not that long. The needs and the numbers are increasing. That necessitates more staff, and that is our greatest expenditure in special education. Second, workforce shortages force us to rely on high-cost contract services. If we decrease those, we are held in violation of law if we decrease those contracts for something less expensive. We are in a lose-lose here when it comes to reducing special ed costs. IEPs are legally binding. You all know that. I strongly urge the support of this bill. Repealing that aid will break us.
Thank you
so much.
Ms. Dean.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Laura Jean. I'm the public policy coordinator for Pacer Center. I also serve on the Blue Ribbon Commission, and I'm here to speak in favor of House File 4114. With the help and guidance of MDE's financial experts, the Commission has spent hours reviewing special education funding. While our work is still in progress, we have begun to outline meaningful recommendations for changes that will improve our special education services, creating greater staffing stability, reducing the redundancy between general and special education, and improving early interventions and inclusion models. These changes could be made in phases in the coming years to minimize disruptions to our already stressed schools. If the Blue Ribbon Commission is forced to move forward with recommending the $250 million in cuts, all children across the state will suffer, because some of those funds for programs that serve all students, such as ADCESS, intervention services aim to reduce inappropriate referrals to special ed and transportation 28 for specific populations such as homelessness, care and treatment, or foster care, would be affected. The impact will be sweeping to our schools already understaffed and under-resourced and disproportionately impact our most vulnerable students. Continuing down this path increases the risk for schools to fail to meet federal government requirements for IDEA to provide appropriate education. These failures have a snowball effect. Unsupported staff burn out and quit, further destabilizing our schools by undermining the community and the work they do to build safe, supportive environments. That lack of stable staff means students' academic communication or sensory needs may go unmet, leading to students not making meaningful progress and sometimes leading to crisis behaviors that could have been prevented. The cost for tertiary interventions further takes a toll on staff and students.
But we don't have to make these cuts.
One more sentence. Instead, we can support the work of the Blue Ribbon Commission to finish their work and make recommendations to improve special education and address costs thoughtfully over time. I ask you to support House File 4114. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Seville, thank you for the treats. Come on up. And Mr. Thomas. Mr. Thomas, you're there first.
Good afternoon, chairs, members of the committee, Representative Bakeberg. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Dr. Michael Thomas, and I am the superintendent with Prior Lake Savage Area School, as well as the executive committee member for AMSD and the federal advocacy chair for MASA. I want to begin by acknowledging the complexity before you. I know you're choosing between what's good and what's good for public resources for all Minnesotans, and I sincerely appreciate your leadership. I want to express my support for House File 4114. Repealing the $250 million special ed reduction without a clear path forward is a thoughtful and responsible first step. From a district perspective, I want to offer one key consideration as you continue this work. Special education is a federal mandate, but it's significantly underfunded. In our district, we spend about $22 million in serving 1,400 students, and we receive only about $1.6 million in federal funding. The rest is covered locally, primarily through general fund, general education budget, so we will increase our cross-subsidies. So when the reductions such as these tasked by the Blue Ribbon Commission are discussed, I want to say that the responsibility gets shifted to the local level. I'll briefly also address a possible approach being discussed using ACCESS funding as a backfill. As you may be aware, and we just heard, ACCESS funds early intervention. And so if we reduce ACCESS, we are going to reduce the funds going into general education for prevention for special education. So we can expect more students to require more intensive, more costly services. So while that may appear to create savings, it risks increasing both costs and student needs over time. We are committed to being strong stewards of public resources, but the question is whether proposed solutions create a long-term sustainability or simply shift costs in ways that are harder to manage later. I wholeheartedly support this bill and really request your bipartisan support and leadership on this effort.
Thank you, Ms. Seville.
Chair Krisha and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Holly Sable, and I'm vice chair of the St. Michael Aberville School Board, someone who's worked with many children and adults with special needs, and a mom, most importantly, of a child who received ECSE and special education services. I'm here to ask for your support of this bill. This bill is about stability for students, staff, and families. School districts across Minnesota right now are having to plan budgets with the threat of $300 million in cuts to special education funding looming over them. But special education isn't optional. It's federally mandated. When funding is cut, we don't cut services. We pull money out of general education classrooms. That means every student is affected. But this is also personal for me. My son received ECSE in speech services. Because of those services and those educators, he was reading at grade level by second grade. Today, he's an 11th grader with on the A honor roll with nearly 36 college credits. That happened because the system worked. I can't imagine what would have happened if those services had been reduced. Cuts to special education don't solve budget problems. They shift them into classrooms, onto teachers, and onto kids. Let's keep our promises to students and to families. Please support House File 4114 and perfect students, families, and students. In schools. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We do have two remote testifiers, Kathy Nathan and John Magus.
Good afternoon, Chair Krisha, Chair Joachim, and committee members. My name is Kathy Nathan. I'm here testifying on behalf of the Rochester School Board and the Minnesota School Boards Association in favor of House File 4114. MSBA supports the ongoing goal of identifying efficiencies and improving outcomes for students with disabilities, but we are deeply concerned by the contingent cut. This legislature took historic steps to stabilize school budgets by committing to cover 50% of the special education cross-subsidy by fiscal year 27. A $250 million cut would effectively erase these hard-won gains, returning school districts to an unsustainable funding model. Any loss in state aid for special education shifts the cost directly onto general education budgets, forcing board to make difficult cuts to regular classroom instruction, elective programs, and essential staffing. The threat of a massive contingent reduction creates unnecessary instability and undermines the commitment to equity and fiscal health that this legislature has previously championed. We must ensure that special education funding remains a reliable commitment rather than a variable in a budget equation. Please support House File 4114, and we thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Mr. Magus.
Thank you, Chair Youakim and Co-Chair Kreisha and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is John Magus, and I serve as Superintendent of Duluth Public Schools. I'm here in strong support of House File 4114. In Duluth, we currently are navigating final stages of a painful $4.2 million budget reduction for the next year. This is on top of other reductions in past years, like many other districts. When our community asks why we're facing a budget deficit, the answer is grounded in systemic math problem. Approximately 50% of our current $4.2 million deficit is driven by special education cross-subsidy needs. Last year, the state made historic progress in buying down that cross-subsidy, and we're very grateful. However, if the Blue Ribbon Commission cannot identify $250 million in efficiencies, as the law mandates, an automatic cut to the very cross-subsidies that we fought for is in risk. This cut would significantly undo the progress we've made, and for a district like Duluth, when state aid is pulled back, the burden shifts to our local general fund and further drains our resources for things like art, music, career and technical education, mental health support for students. The Blue Ribbon Commission's work to transform these services is valuable, and we welcome their insights, but special education funding should not be used as a placeholder for cuts. We should be balancing the budget on these needs and not on the backs of our most valuable learners. By passing House File 4114, you provide the certainty and stability for Duluth and every other district in Minnesota that we desperately need, and focuses on the growth of our students and achievement of our students as well. Thank you for your time and your support of Minnesota students.
And thank you. With that, members, I am definitely in a time crunch, and I have a lot of people who want to talk to us yet. So I'm going to go Chair Youakim, close Chair Bakeberg, and then do a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand we are in a time crunch. I just wanted to say and remind folks, level set here, this bill repeal would cost $250 million that we do not have right now, and because the cuts have already been booked as savings in the budget. This is a position from last year's bill that had bipartisan angst between both Chair Kreisha and I. We did not want to have it be part of our bill, but it was the cost of getting an education bill passed, which was desperately needed to have our K-12 schools funded. We're sending this to Ways and Means as a message statement of our displeasure. You will also note that Chair Kreisha and I, neither of us, have signed on to the governor's proposal that would have added $50 million more of these cuts. So I want to thank Representative Hicks and Representative Bakeberg for having this on your radar and introducing a bill. And members, I suggest a yes vote.
Thank you. Representative Bakeberg, quick close.
Testifiers said it best. Vote yes.
Okay, thank you. And members, we do need to send a clear message to the governor. These cuts can't be accepted and approved. So with that, Ms. Boko, call for the roll.
Chair Kreisha.
Aye.
Chair Youakim.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bakeberg.
Yes.
Vice Chair Clardy.
Aye.
Altendorf.
Yes.
Bonner.
Aye.
Bennett.
Aye.
DePell.
Aye.
Gander.
Aye.
Gordon.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Hill.
Hill, yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
Knutson.
Yes.
Lawrence.
Lawrence votes yes.
Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Perez-Vega.
Perez-Vega, yes.
Quam.
Yes.
Ream.
Ream, yes.
Ray Rauer.
Yes.
Reimer.
Aye.
Censor Mira.
Aye.
Vernig.
Aye.
And with that, there being 24 ayes and 0 nays, the ayes have it, and House File 4114 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Yeah, you can clap for that. Thank you. And members, that concludes our business. And now we're going to move on to talking about other ideas, and part of the committee work is exploring new ideas. or thinking outside of our own political constraints. And so with that, we have a couple of experts today. They're going to be talking about educational savings accounts and beneficiaries of parental empowerment. And with that, I would ask Dr. Patrick Graff, I hope I got that right, and then Betsy Sandoff to come up. Oh, she's remote. Okay. So my apologies for the time crunch, but as you can see, a lot of good discussion, a lot of things. So Dr. Graff, please begin. State your name for the record, and you can begin.
Yes. Good afternoon, committee chairs and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Patrick Graff. I'm a senior fellow with the American Federation for Children, where I conduct research and advise on school choice policy across the country. I'm grateful for the invitation to speak today about new research from other states who have adopted programs like education savings accounts and their results over time, including how these programs have demonstrated an ability to positively impact students in both traditional public and non-public schools. So first, I'd like to offer some context for Minnesota's current results in the K-12 education system. So as of fiscal year 2024, in terms of academic achievement as assessed by the National Assessment for Educational Progress, or NAEP, Minnesota used to, in the early 2000s and mid-2010s, rank as a top five state across the country for academic achievement in English and math. But as of 2024, according to the Urban Institute's demographically adjusted NAEP scores, which control for differences in the characteristics of students across states, Minnesota is now ranked 31st. On Minnesota's own state assessments, over half of students do not meet grade level standards in reading and math. What then are effective educational interventions that Minnesota could pursue in response? Recent research published in the last couple years on the longest running school choice programs across the country provides some evidence of the efficacy of school choice policy as one such intervention. So voucher programs and education savings account programs are often framed in terms of how they will benefit students who use those programs. So these are scholarships for kids to find a school that better fits their educational needs. But what about the kids who remain in public schools? Do choice programs detract from the needed funding and hurt students that are left behind? This committee makes decisions about how to allocate resources in the state, including for education. And what are those interventions that have the most rigorous research? What have they found? What are the relative impacts of school choice on public school student academic outcomes? And what if we had spent that same funding that is spent on school choice programs in other states, what if we had just simply spent that same funding directly on public schools instead? So last month, I published a study testing this question in the context of Florida. So this analysis brings together two lines of research that were published in top peer-reviewed economics journals in the last couple years. So just to emphasize the underlying research I'm relying upon here, I did not conduct myself. All of these numbers are independently verifiable and are part of the study that we have put out. And it's comparing these two lines of research, the effects of additional school spending on student achievement, and two, the effects of school choice-induced competition on public school students. So in the first paper in this school spending approach was published last year by Professors Jackson and Makavicius in 2024 in the American Economic Journal of Applied Economics. They conducted a meta-analysis of 31 of the highest quality school spending studies from across the country. And they found that the effect of increasing school spending on average for students was that if you spent an additional $1,000 per year per pupil, you could expect a modest but present increase in test scores by about 5 to 6 days of learning for every $1,000 extra spent. So if allocated well, new spending can work, but a somewhat large cost for modest improvements. The other line of research published by Professor David Figlio, former Northwestern professor and co-authors, was published in 2023 in American Economic Journal for Economic Policy. And they studied the longest running and most rigorous study. They conducted the most rigorous study of competitive effects in the school choice research literature on competitive effects. They tracked over 15 years Florida's tax credit scholarship program. So first passed in 2003, until 2017, where it grew from 15,000 students to over 100,000 students across that time span. Their analysis compared students, and these are public school students, in areas facing comparatively higher levels of competition due to the presence of nearby private schools, and this was 55% of students in the state. It's over 1.5 million kids affected to this higher competition, to those in public schools facing lower competition. They found that public school students in areas with high competition experience growing academic benefits in the form of higher test scores, fewer suspensions, and fewer absences as the choice program scaled up. So after 15 years, the reading effects reached approximately 120 days of extra learning. It's about two-thirds of a school year. And that effect was even larger for low-income students in those schools, 140 days for low-income students. The total cost of that investment that Florida made in their private school choice program over 15 years was $2.8 billion. This is a low-income targeted program for kids in the state. So what if instead of spending that $2.8 billion that they made available for state tax credits, what if they had instead just simply increased public school budgets by that same amount over the same period of time for the same group of kids that benefited from high competition? That would have come out to about $127 per public school student per year over that 15 years. So using the highest quality scholarship in both areas, I found that scaling Florida's tax credit scholarship over that 15 years improved public school student achievement through competition much more than we could reasonably expect had that same amount of new funding had instead been spent directly on the public school system. In fact, the academic benefits for public school students in those schools facing higher levels of competition, remember this is more than half of students in the state, were 11 times higher than what the best research on school spending would predict. And I actually believe that this is a conservative estimate. We know for the vast majority of private school choice programs, the scholarship amount is less than half of what public schools receive per pupil, which represents a cost savings every time a student switches from the public sector to the non-public sector. That was not taken into account in this analysis. Additionally, any competitive effects that might have improved kids in marginally low competition areas, maybe just right below that 55% of kids, was also not included in that comparison. And finally, this was at the scale of a whole state. In the academic research on education, it is very hard to find an intervention that scales to 1.5 million students and remains efficacious. Typically with educational interventions, think of tutoring, for example. We know this is an incredibly effective intervention for kids. It works really well if you have a well-designed program for maybe, say, 0 to 100 kids within a school, or maybe even 500 kids. Once you move beyond 500 kids, your costs dramatically go up, and the efficacy of those programs actually goes down. In contrast, in Florida, what they found is as the tax credit scholarship program scaled, the competition effects actually got larger and became more cost-effective. So you end up having an outsized effect for a very low cost. So since then, the choice program in Florida has continued to grow and has expanded into the nation's largest set of private school choice programs. They're all now ESA programs, with over 500,000 students participating, so over 500,000 students participating. How do the public schools students look in Florida as of 2024? They continue to perform at a high level. So fourth grade students in Florida continue to achieve above the national average on the NAEP. And low-income fourth grade students in Florida are reading at one grade level ahead where low-income students in Minnesota are achieving currently as measured by the NAEP. So I want to close by noting that this evidence extends well beyond competitive effects to things like college enrollment and graduation. So another study just recently published in 2023 from the Urban Institute tracked 6,000 recipients of their choice scholarship program, the Ohio Ed Choice Program, found that their scholarship users were 32% more likely to enroll in college and 60% more likely to earn a bachelor's degree, with the largest effects for the low-income students who use the program. And fascinatingly, this was the first time in the research literature, that same study also found positive competitive effects for public school students in districts that were eligible for the voucher but did not use it. So these public school kids who were facing that competitive pressure also benefited in terms of college going. So overall, the evidence from states with robust school choice systems is consistent. Well-designed programs improve outcomes for participating students, and they generate competitive benefits for students who remain in public schools. One concern in Florida was that the private schools may just be taking some of the, let's say, easiest to educate students from the public schools. In contrast, that same study I referenced earlier actually found that Medicaid-eligible and recent immigrant families were disproportionately more likely to use the tax credit scholarship program. In my own state of Indiana now, where I live, research on our voucher program found that students who had a history of disciplinary incidents were actually more likely to use the voucher to switch schools, often perhaps because they're seeking a better environment for their learning.
And Dr. Graff, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
Yes.
A couple more testimonies.
Yep, last sentence. Yep. Overall, this new evidence suggests that passing and growing school choice programs could be considered a system-level education intervention worthy of consideration as an incredibly cost-effective method for raising public school achievement at scale. Thank you. And I provided a handout, which you may have received, but my email is on there. Please feel free to follow up. Happy to discuss.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to go to our remote testifiers. We have Betsy Sandoval and Aiden Sash.
Thank you, Chair Crenshaw and members of the committee, for the opportunity to share my experience with about school choice today. My name is Betsy Sandoval. I am from Iowa, and I'm a current first-generation college student studying international relations in law, politics, and society at Drake University. And I can personally say that without certainty that I would not be standing before you today, because if it weren't for the opportunities provided by not only the Iowa ESA, but tuition organizations in my state, I am where I am today because not only my mother's fight, but not just for herself, but for her children. She made it her priority to give me and my siblings a better future than the one that she had. And I can personally attest the importance of educational choice, having grown up in not only a challenging home environment, but a challenging school environment following my parents' divorce. So I switched from a public elementary to a private Catholic middle school. And in this new environment, I was not only able to flourish with access to educators who cared for me, but and had my best interests at heart. However, even this change didn't fully meet my academic needs. This led to me having to beg my mom not to attend a private Catholic school that was 40 minutes away from where we lived. And if it weren't my mom willingly changing my school environment, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have had so many multitude of opportunities to receive without the ability to choose where I got my education. And switching schools really did change my trajectory in life because it allowed me to discover so many different opportunities, and college being the first one. Luckily, I get to be a first-generation college student, so education really is a foundation to opening a bunch of whole load of opportunities. And my mom still fights for me and my siblings despite the challenges. As a low-income family, my mom being the only sole provider, the financial burden of attending a private school was very significant, sometimes even challenging. Unfortunately, through the tuition organization and most recently the Iowa ESA, we used the Iowa ESA to cover tuition, and which finally removed the impossible choice that my mother had to face, having to decide whether to pay for her car or for her children's education. These grants enabled me and my siblings to attend private schools and helped me flourish and brought me where I am today. I'm sharing my story not only because I want Minnesota students to have the same options that I did, but educational choice can be so transformative. It shapes the futures beyond so many profound ways, and it ensures that a student's potential isn't limited due to their financial circumstances. And I urge you to please make this a program available to Minnesota families. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your story and your testimony. Mr. Sash, Aiden Sash.
Good afternoon. My name is Aiden Sash, and thank you for allowing me to share my story today. When I was born, I had a tube around my neck, making it impossible to breathe. Luckily, I survived. However, it caused speech issues. My dad left our family before I was born, and my older brother's dad was in and out of jail. But our single mother worked two jobs and worked and wanted the best for us. My brother, who is 5 years older than me, who has ADHD, attended public school. However, he was bullied and picked on every day. Some days, he would even come back with bruises. My mom eventually had enough of it and took him out of that school. She didn't know where to send him. She ended up at a church where she prayed and cried for an answer. The priest of the church came out, asked what was happening, and found a solution for us. Through scholarships from the Catholic Tuition Organization, the priest helped me and my brother attend the school that was attached to the church. The school was a fit and had accommodations for both my speech and my brother's ADHD. However, in fourth grade, we lost our home. Even though we were homeless, my mom was more concerned about our education than finding us a home. When we found a place, everything seemed to fit right. But a few years later, I started to get bullied again. My mom took me on tours of other schools. Many didn't fit me. However, we found one that truly made me feel like I was at home. I was happy. Unfortunately, I could only stay there for a year because I had to move. I felt like I didn't fit in again. Luckily for me, there was a high school where most of my friends were going. My mom struggled to make sure I could attend all four months. But in my junior year, Iowa passed the State's Education Saving Act program. In my senior year, I received the scholarship, and finally, my mom didn't have to work two jobs, and I didn't have to work 30-hour work weeks to pay for the additional cost of tuition. Because of this school choice, I am now studying mechanical engineering at Iowa State University. Iowa's ESA program gave my family relief and allowed me to focus on academics. This could be possible for students in Minnesota as well. Every student should have an opportunity to receive an equal education without any financial hardships. Because of school choice, my mom gets to see me grow through my education and that her sacrifices were worth it. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much. Thank you for that. And members, we are out of time. I do have three test fires left. If you want to stick around, I'm happy to talk to you afterwards. I have three that I wasn't able to get to. I deeply am sorry about that. I do want to go to Chair Joachim for a quick preview for Thursday, and then I have a couple closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Thursday, we will have a presentation about special education and IEP process from South St. Paul Public Schools. I believe it was on your agenda that we had to cancel, so we liked the presentation and thought we'd bring it back. We will also have a walkthrough of the governor's proposals, as well as a bill of mine on student support personnel aid that will have an amendment on it for school safety approaches.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. And with that, members, just want to thank you. This is my last gavel, and it's been an honor. And thank you all for the time and what you've given to me. And with that, this concludes our business for today. Our next meeting will be Thursday, April 16th, 2026. This committee is adjourned.